Well, don't tell me.
Well, I just couldn't. I couldn't possibly tell you. It's here. Can't you feel it? This whole room. This
rendition of the first ever Trees Reach podcast. I am Luke.
I'm Dylan.
And I'm Riley.
And today on episode 5, we are talking about song number 5 on our album, Some Night You Will Hear Me Growing. This song.
Did you say growing?
I said crowing. I said crowing, Dylan. I said crowing. There's no way I messed up. This song is called Wake Up, She Cried. Peter Pan has come, and that he is to teach us to fly. A song title that is far too long. Just kidding. You know, earlier when we were setting up this podcast, Rick wasn't on the line, but I flubbed up and I called it Wake Up, She Cried. We're about to teach Harry Potter how to fish. it wasn't really planned. It just came out. So I'm going to take this moment to allow you, the listener, to pause and listen to the song if you'd like. If not, then enjoy listening to us talk about this song, I guess.
Yeah.
So, boys, do you have anything to say before we get started?
I do, and it's that when you said that it just came out, that you said the whole Harry Potter thing, the first thing that came to my mind was, sometimes the truth just sounds different from Almost Famous.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it does, and I think that's one situation where it rings true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are about to teach Harry Potter how to fish.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, really well put, Riley. That was great. I want to take a second to talk about the form of this song, just kind of the course it takes if you haven't heard it, and if you're just too gosh darn lazy to go listen to it right this second.
Which, by the way, if you do, like, this is a type of song where if you're like in a public place right now wearing like Apple earphones or something in a noisy area, probably don't listen to it, because the song depends a lot on you being able to hear something go from extremely quiet, almost silent, to extremely loud, to get the full experience. But
yeah,
anyway, maybe we should say the worst place to listen to this song. My argument might be just through like your phone, like you're trying to show your friends, like, hey, dude, check out this crazy Trees Reach song.
Yes.
And
yeah,
I like imagining a crowd of people around them, and they're just listening to a very quiet song.
Well, and especially with a phone speaker is mono, and as we'll talk about, like...
No, dude, the new iPhone is stereo. New iPhone is stereo.
Oh, great. Perfect. No, the kind of the key element of the song, or like the bedrock of the song, is two tones that are separated by the left and right ears. And so if you play on a mono speaker, it just sounds like a pulsing warbling, and it doesn't actually make the noise that it's supposed to. So, not a phone song either. Anyway.
Yeah, and probably not a highway song. I wouldn't take this song in your car on the highway. Yeah.
But you're going to talk about the overview of the song, Dylan.
Oh, yeah. So the overview of the song, it's pretty much just a constant build for a little over 4 minutes. You start by hearing what's called binaural beats, which Riley will get into later, I'm sure. But it just amounts to basically kind of hearing like a hum or a rumble, but it's two tones, very, very slightly different in pitch, that, as Riley said earlier, are panned hard left and hard right, to kind of create this sort of movement, sonic bed kind of a thing. And then a voice sample comes in of a woman talking about something, but we don't know what. Over that, slowly more comes in. You have some strings, you have some more sonic tones, and then eventually blows up into a full orchestral climax. That's about it.
Yeah, that's the song. Mm-hmm. You've heard it now, basically.
Yeah, no need to listen.
So this song was kind of constructed outside of my reach. Dylan and Riley. Dylan and Riley had the opportunity to work on this song without me. If it were me helping along, it'd probably turn into an EDM song. just kidding. Please know that I'm just kidding. But I am going to be asking them the questions. So let's start with the first question, boys. What is the function of this song on the album in context of the story? What's happening with why does the song exist?
Well, I can take that one. This song is really a tone shift in the album, and it is the thing that really points to what the whole album is about. I think I said probably in the first episode, so I'll recap it here. When we were making music with a different drummer, and he and I were, his name's David, when David and I were talking about wanting to do a concept album way back in like 2010 or something like that, he came up with the idea of it being about a guy going back and forth between his dreams and reality. So that was basically the thread running through all the years of this album coming together. And so this song, and there are four more songs on the album that are what we refer to as dream songs, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the guy is falling asleep, having lucid dreams. It's a means of escapism. And so you can kind of look at the first four tracks on the album as like a quadruplet, like it's kind of one big view into his routine in his life. And then track five is curveball. New player has entered the game. What's going on? And of course, there's no lyrics in this song, but it's meant to be felt and heard as, okay, he's seeing something. And you'll notice that after this song, the tone of the lyrics kind of change. And then you get the next dream song. And after that dream song, the tone of the lyrics changes yet a little bit more. And this pattern keeps going on throughout the album, basically to his demise and inevitably redemption at the end. But this is the first glimpse into this world of basically his own imagination, where he feels like, hey, I don't have to grow up. I can stay here. I am sufficient unto myself. And it's euphoric for him. And it's his driving passion and obsession for the rest of the album. Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think, Riley? Do you have anything to add to that?
No, I don't really have much to add, other than, do we want to like maybe name drop the other dream songs in case anyone was wondering which ones those were?
Yeah. Okay. So, anything with a long title, that has quotes is probably a dream song. So the next one is "Then All Went on Their Knees and Holding Out Their Arms Cried, Oh Wendy Lady Be Our Mother." And then after that you have "Some Night You'll Hear Me Crowing Part One," then "Look How the Water Is Rising" on disc two, and "Some Night You'll Hear Me Crowing Part Two" as the second to last track. And that's that last one I mentioned is the only exception in terms of the dream songs not having lyrics. Mm-hmm. But that one's kind of a special case. Well, obviously, right. Have an episode about that.
And all of these are quotes from the Peter Pan novel form.
Right.
And also, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people haven't seen the physical disc of our album, and I've only seen on like online on streaming sites. But if you don't know, it is a two-disc album. And
have it right here.
Yeah.
Nice.
Why don't you give us a little peruse?
Yeah. Well, what were you going to say, though?
Well, the only thing I was going to add was that, like, the third Dream song, "Some Night You Will Hear Me Crowing," part one, is the last track on disc one. And then "Crowds and Loud Noises" is the first track on disc two. So if you've ever been listening to our album and felt like, boy, I could really use a break, a good place to take a break, a well-deserved break, is at the end of disc one. It's just too bad that we weren't able to clarify that on the streaming services. Mm-hmm. It's all just like one big block of songs.
Yeah. Well, this will only be handy for our people watching, so I'll just do this really quick. We have disc one over here, disc two over here.
And, could you lift it up a little bit? There we go.
Some glare.
Yeah, you may notice that the Dream songs here, here, and here are all indented.
And italicized.
And italicized. And they're underneath this moon emblem. So there's a little hint there that's kind of telling you without telling you, hey, these are different. And then the sun over here for when he's awake and not in a dream state. And then we have the same idea at play over here. You can buy these on our website if you don't have one. And there's a whole booklet in this centerpiece here. I don't know if I can do this without looking at it. There's a whole booklet. You get the idea.
Yeah.
They're pretty tight in there.
They're pretty tight in there.
The booklet has all the pretty lyrics written.
It has all the lyrics and everything.
And credits to our amazing collaborators on the album.
Yes, absolutely. So, I obviously I'm biased, but it's worth picking up, I think. Cool. Oh. Yeah, that's the function it serves on the album.
Cool.
There you go.
So, second question, who wrote it? And tell me about the writing process.
Mm-hmm. Well, the writing process, as is the case with most of the stuff on this album, was very unorthodox and spread out, and a conglomeration of many things. A marbleization of things, you could say. Is that a word?
A marvelization?
No, marble, like it's marbled. Like things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, dude.
And hardening into a stone that looks really cool, and you can like flick them at each other and play a game. Anyway.
Oh.
I wrote when I was talking about like little marbles, like, you know, like marbles you'd...
I thought you meant like a countertop, marble countertop.
No, I'm talking about like spherical marbles that you like, you know.
I thought you were talking about like the marbling in a meat, you know, in like a nice steak.
That too.
Like marbled rye or something.
No, but I wasn't talking about that.
Bread.
All right. I said or like marbled rye. Not such as marble dry. You got to listen close, man. You got to listen close.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so I... this song stemmed from a series of chords that I was messing around with on the piano many moons ago. And we ended up using one of the melodies that I had incorporated into this little ditty I was writing. That melody became like the main motif of the album, like the dream motif, you could say.
And a motif is a musical idea that's basically just shy of a theme. Mm-hmm. So
it's like tied to a literal theme in the bigger piece of art that it's incorporated with.
Right.
Yeah. And so we took those chords, and they eventually became what the harmonic content of this song is. So Dylan, do you want to talk about like trying to weed out the history of how this came together, or should we talk about like the growth of the song first?
I do have just a few quick thoughts about you writing it. And why we decided to run with it, because there obviously was something about the series of chords that we thought was really special. I first heard this song, I don't know what year it would have been. We were kind of trying to speculate before we started rolling. It was maybe 2012 or 13 or 14, somewhere
when you first heard like the piano chords.
Yeah, I want to say 2013. So I will. No. It was before that, because it was before I moved. It was probably 2012.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'll roll with that.
Yeah. I very briefly had a big Wurlitzer electric organ in my house. So not like a Wurlitzer electric piano, but a Wurlitzer organ, like a Hammond B3, but a Wurlitzer. And it was pretty broken. And I think I was given it from a friend. I think his family was moving and he's like, yo, you want this Wurlitzer organ? And I didn't know anything about organs at the time. And so in my head, I'm thinking it'll have a Leslie speaker built in, because I didn't realize that those were like their own separate things. A Leslie speaker is what you hear in rock music, where like it has kind of this rotary sound where it'll speed up and slow down. You hear it in like classic rock all the time. And so I was like, yeah, dude, I'll take an organ. Did not have that. It was just like an organ you would find at your church.
It was the church basement organ. Not a church basement organ, but the one in your church's basement that no one has played.
Exactly. It was that organ. Yeah. Mm. And so I had Riley over and I was like, yo, check out this organ, you know, because it was kind of cool, even though it wasn't what I expected it to be. And we're just hanging out. I think I was laying on the couch and he was playing this series of chords. And I eventually asked him if he was just making it up, because I was like, that sounds really cool. He had it in, it was like a really mellow tone. It just sounded like a pure sine wave kind of a thing. And it was really simultaneously like relaxing and electric and haunting. And I was like, man, like, what is he just inspired by the organ right now and just whipping out these chords? And you said, no, it was something that you had been messing around with. But that's where I first heard the motif of the album, which was the da 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 da. It was built into that song. And I think at this time we were thinking about, yeah, how do we want to, we knew we wanted to have these dream songs that were instrumental, but we didn't know how to execute it. And so somewhere between me hearing that and now, we decided, yeah, that'll be the, let's make that the theme of the dreams. Cause to me, as I was thinking about it today, how it made me feel, I think the best way I can put it is that it sounded like birth. Like there's something about that melody that made it sound like something was waking up, especially hearing it from so small and unassuming a thing. And even just hearing it played on a piano, which I hope Riley will do in just a second here. You know, when you hear it big, it's really awe-inspiring and it's cool. But when you hear it small, which you never do on the album, and I think it's kind of too bad, it sounds like birth. It sounds like something new and old simultaneously. And yeah, so it had this magic built into it that we wanted to run with, which is why we did. Now, that being said, Riley, do you want to play that on the piano, how you would have first written it?
Yeah, sure. For sure. Let me pull it up here. How does this sound? Can I see that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll probably need a couple runs through it to get it actually right, but it's these really... I'll start from like the beginning of it, which ends up being the end of this song that we've been talking about. But these are really gigantic chord voicings, which are the best kind of chord voicings because they're big. Like I'm starting with, I don't know if you can see, but I'm starting like the bottom left hand is an octave plus a third, and the top hand is an octave plus a second. And so with just four notes, you cover this giant range. So I loved playing piano voicings like that. And so I was just messing around with these chords, and I came up with this totally diatonic chord progression, but something that sounded really special. So I'll see if I can play it. All right, so we've decided that it was actually an octave higher than I was just playing it. So it actually sounds like something like this. Thank you. And so those
so good.
Thanks. So those last three chords are what ended up being the beginning of the song, and the whole first part I played ended up being the end of the song. But we took the as the motif to run with as far as the dream theme. Mm.
For those of you really familiar with the album, it might interest you to know now that the part that he started playing tonight and the climax of the first dream song is also the climax of part one of Some Night You Will Hear Me Crowing. It just has a counter melody and a French horn playing over it, which finds its origin in the next dream song. So it's those two songs coming together.
Yes, indeed.
If you want to go back and listen and imagine, if you can keep all of that in your mind. Yeah.
Now, Rick, you mentioned a little buzzword. You said diatonic. And for those at home that are definitely not me, who don't know what that word is, what is that word?
Yeah, so Luke asked what diatonic means, and we had a whole fiasco figuring out the actual definition. But what I mean when I say diatonic is that it doesn't go out of the major scale notes in the given key that it's in. So we all know what do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, that's that sound. So a diatonic just means that you're just using those seven notes to make an entire song, which is very common and very pleasing to the ear, but a bit boring if that's all you ever do. So that's just a little music theory thing for you. Little term. This song is too diatonic. This is boring. Is this diatonic? I hate this.
Is this diatonic?
Everyone I talk to says that.
Yeah, I've heard so many people say that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's head on to the third question, which is kind of a three-parter. I would like to know how long the whole writing and possibly recording process of this song took. How long did that take? Second part, what were you going for? And I'd like for you to talk about arranging it as you're kind of going through it.
Yeah. What was the first question? The first part of the question?
How long
did it take?
Oh, Riley would probably know that.
Yeah. So if I wrote those chords in 2012 and then in like 2013, 14, as we were figuring out what we wanted these dream songs to be and decided to use that, depending on where you mark it, I would say that we didn't decide to use those chords as the first dream song till like late 2013. That'd be my guess, my guesstimate. And so obviously we finished the album in summer 2017. But the song was fully formed like a year before that.
Yeah. Yeah. We finished it in 2016. I remember listening to early versions of it in summer of 2016.
Yeah. And so that, but maybe about 2.5-3 years of like actually like having the song sort of floating around. That's about the time frame. What was the second part of the question? Or Dylan, did you have anything to add to that?
I did. I'm trying to remember what it was. No, I don't remember. Luke, what was the second part of the question?
What were you going for? What was the mood?
Oh, what were we going for? Yeah. That is a great question. Because we were basically with it. Well, with these being dream songs, I can remember saying to Riley, let me start by saying this. The writing the dream songs was, in my opinion, far and away the hardest thing about this album. Absolute hardest. Because I knew how I wanted it to feel. And I wanted it to feel like a really, really vivid dream. like I've had dreams in the past where the whatever the feeling is, whether it's like absolute euphoria and joy or extreme terror, translates to tingles in my physical body. I'm like partially awake, but I'm having this imagery or whatever. And so in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I want a song that feels like that. And we knew, we also knew that we didn't want it to sound, as soon as we knew we were going to go orchestral with it, as opposed to predominantly synthy or band oriented or something like that. We talked, Riley and I talked about how we didn't want it to be like cinematic in a Hollywood sense, at least not the first one. Later on, it certainly gets there, but the first one needed to be like a deeper music than that. It needed to have a really, we wanted people to get done listening to the song for the first time, and best case scenario, they come away being like, I don't really remember what that did, but I remember how it felt, because that's what a crazy dream feels like. So that's what we were going for. And so obviously that you can't just do that. And that amounts to way more than just writing melodies and writing a chord progression. So we honestly felt really out of our depth. I remember, we felt out of our depth because we were out of our depth. I remember long afternoons where like, Riley and I would get together kind of begrudgingly and be like, okay, we've got to figure out what we're going to do for these dream songs. We've been working on songs around it the whole time. Okay, so after the first dream song, which is a total question mark, it's going to sound like this. And then after the second one, it might do something like that. But then we know for sure it's going to do these songs. And eventually you just got to address the question mark. So we'd be like in his room. I can remember summer days where we would just be like laying on his bed. We probably like lit some incense or something and just closed our eyes and said, okay, like, what do you see? What do you hear? It got pretty like out there. Just trying to like, man, how are we going to do this? And I could remember having like visuals of the song and saying like, okay, what if you have kind of a, like a bed of, no, I didn't put it in these words, but you had like a foundation of sound, but it's just kind of blackness. Then we see like a point of light, and then we hear something like moving past our ear, something like that. And I could describe that, but it never had the content to manifest. So, and this might segue into your third part of your question. What was that? Oh, you were asking about arranging it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it absolutely factors into that.
It will.
So something that's worth saying about this, I am pretty unashamed in saying this is probably my favorite song we've ever written. I'm unashamed in saying that because it was A, Riley who wrote the actual content of the song, and B, I felt like the arrangement ideas we had for it, it wasn't like we had a vision for it in our head and then we made it happen. It was like, maybe this will work. Okay, that's kind of cool. And it was a series of like kind of falling up that like led to this thing happening that we were like, whoa, definitely. Like, we didn't have a vision for this song. We were just trying stuff. And it was a very unmusical process for the most part. Not glorious. It was frustrating. And it took 2.5 years to bring it to where it ended up. But that's part of what I love so much about it, is that it sounds so enigmatic, and it was enigmatic. It felt more like we were uncovering a music or something like that, that had been there for a long time. And it was like, yep, you're getting closer. We knew when we heard something, oh, like that's kind of it. That's one angle of it. That's something. So like, how do we draw that out? And so it was more of a game of that than us being like good at what we do and having, I think it's all luck in this song. Like, there's no genius in this song. I think it's luck.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I can talk about the arrangement, to kind of piggyback off of you, Dil. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, as Dylan was saying, we had spent a lot of time hypothesizing about this song and like what we wanted it to feel like, and admittedly, a lot of it was like Dylan having a really clear vision for what he wanted it to feel like, and me being like, "Yeah, totally, man, we can do that." But eventually, I had the idea to incorporate binaural beats, which is, as we mentioned earlier, what starts a song and what is sort of the bedrock of the song. I like to think of it as like the black water at the base of the song. Like it's formless and empty, to use a biblical metaphor. And I had been interested in binaural beats kind of around that time or slightly before that time, which is when you play two tones which are like only a few hertz apart, and hertz is cycles per second, so they're almost basically the same note, or in our case they're about one full tone apart. I think I used a low G and a low A that were about 10 hertz apart, so it's not like a perfect G or perfect A, but I used 10 hertz just as like a whole number. When you listen to it on headphones, you don't hear a low note and another low note. You hear like a warbling, spinning. Like I see it as like an orb, like a spirit orb.
Oh,
spinning and kind of shaking, and that's sort of what my brain perceived. But basically, your two ears can't focus on those, like that slight of a difference when they're totally separated. Like your brain is like, what the heck's going on? And so you experience a different sound, a different phenomenon as a result. And there's a lot of like pseudoscience out there about how like, oh, your brain waves like adjust to the frequency and this is how you can like hack your brain. I don't think it's true, but it's kind of cool to think it might be true. So we used a frequency that was supposedly to like enter you into a dreamlike state. It's an alpha frequency. There's like alpha, beta, delta. They categorize the different frequencies. It's all very official and very cool. So we use that frequency as the bedrock. And I honestly don't, I must have just had some sort of gumption to pull that LSD lady sample. From
YouTube. Should talk about that.
Yeah, like how we came to that one or what?
Yeah, like, I mean, how did you even know that existed?
Yeah, so there's a viral video that went viral probably in 2009 or 10 of a like released footage where they were doing like government tests on LSD. Back in the 50s. And so there's this really great video of just some woman probably in her 30s, maybe early 40s, just like a normal Jane off the street. And she somehow got into this test. And she is, as the kids say, tripping balls as they interview her. And the interviewee has this very, you know, curt
the interviewer, you mean?
Yeah, the interviewer has this very curt voice, and he's like asking her these questions, as you can hear in the song, and she's just on a different planet. And what is really cool about the audio clip though is like on a non-humorous level is that she's really seeing something. Like she's experiencing something really meaningful and really intense and almost frightening in how visceral it is. So I just ripped the audio from YouTube and put it over the binaural beats, and I think I just picked a segment I liked and then had it so I could just stretch it to loop it, so it would keep playing over and over again, and built it from there. And originally, it was just going to be a placeholder. Like, we were thinking, you know, this is cool, but like we can't use that viral video's audio, like
right.
that would be hokey, or like we're not going to do that. And we most of the time probably trying to get this song right was trying to find a different sound clip than the YouTube video. I tried to look in like old movies because we wanted to have like a old recorded sound, whether that was like an old home video camera or like an old movie or old tape sounded recording. And we wanted it to have the effect of someone's talking about something that they don't understand and they're kind of amazed and almost scared, but also really exhilarated. And it turns out that that's really hard to find, and it's a very specific thing.
I bet like the Germans or something have a word for that. You know how like other languages have crazy words for crazy concepts right. that English doesn't?
Yeah, there's a word out there for it.
Yeah.
But we even, we looked through old home videos. So both Dylan and I had especially Dylan had hours upon hours.
Volumes, chronicles of family videos.
Chronicles yeah. of family videos that all had the right sound. It was that old, badly recorded dialogue audio. But we couldn't find anything that was quite right.
Yeah. I remember one that I thought was promising until we watched it and realized it was just way too quiet and you couldn't understand the dialogue was my dad was taping one of my sisters sleepwalking when she was probably about 8 years old, 8 or 10 years old. And she's just talking dream nonsense. And so I'm thinking, okay, perfect. That's the sauce. We'll use that because that's so relevant. It's personal. No one will have heard this, but it just completely didn't work out. So we did, you were telling the story, Riley. I'll let you continue.
Oh no. I mean, if you had anything to add, I'm just goofing over here.
No, I think that was about it.
Yeah. We also used, we'll talk more about this later, but as a little teaser, we ended up using an old recording of Dylan's parents, in a different dream song.
Mm-hmm.
So that search was not to no avail, but it didn't come out for this song. After probably a full 2 years of sitting on this audio and thinking, we can't use this, we were finally like, you know what, this is exactly the vibe. And like the song built itself around this audio clip. Like that was kind of the seed of it. That was the drive behind everything else that we eventually added to it. So it's kind of a fool's errand to try to find something that is as good as that when it's such a specific feeling that it's portraying.
Yeah. Yeah. And once we had the binaural beats and the sample, Riley, that's when you put in those piano chords, which in case you didn't notice, the listener, the piano chords play with the lady's voice in the sample to play in her gaps as she's speaking, which I think is a good musical touch on Riley's part. But hearing that, we knew we wanted to hear stuff building up around that. So I took that home. I went into my room and I just threw some Hollywood strings, good old string samples that we used for this album, on my MIDI keyboard, and it's that whole intro bit is only three chords, and so I was hearing like strings starting off really wide and deep, and then over time just kind of another tone would come in, like, oh, okay, things are sounding kind of good, and like, oh man, what's this over here? And things just kind of keep stirring and building to the point where without noticing, it has just developed into a raging sea of sound, and things hard pan and then like crossing the field and coming center, then coming at you. And it like, so in, I don't know how long it took me, not very long, because it was mostly what you hear in the intro. I say the intro, what you hear for most of the song, like the big buildup portion of the song, those strings in there was basically improvised. in a couple takes, because I was just feeling it, and like cool voicings were just kind of naturally coming out. And I think there were only a couple chords where I changed one note, like that would resolve better or whatever. But I remember recording that in an afternoon, and then it was Riley's birthday when I recorded that. And so we were going to this trampoline park in Cedar Rapids called AirFX for his birthday, because Riley's 12. And
shut up!
AirFX is for children of all ages, Riley. But I rendered out really quick and said, Riley, check out these strings I recorded for this song. And so I sat him down in his room in between his speakers, and he was closing his eyes and listening. And it gets to
really
the part.
Really pushing this 12-year-old thing, huh?
I sat him down in his room.
Riley, I need to tell you something. No, he's almost a full-grown man at the time. But here's a little litmus test for if you want to know if your song is good. You show it to Riley Thurm, who hardly ever expresses really – well, he never expresses excited emotion out of obligation. He only expresses excited emotions if he's really actually feeling it. So, you know, if he gets laughing or if he gets yelling, it's really something cooking. And that's how I knew that we had a good thing with those strings, is because I remember by the end of that buildup, you said it got way louder than you expected it to, which is kind of part of that electric feeling where it's like, whoa, there's something else going on here. This isn't like, this went from being like a rock album to being like, I feel like I'm seeing something I'm not supposed to be seeing type of an album. So that was a big turning point for the song for me, for sure, was getting the strings in there.
Yeah, I think the strings are definitely what sealed the deal, because we had the binaural beats, the sound sample, the piano, and then also what we haven't talked about is what's called the shepherd's tone, which is this rising tone that kind of comes in midway through, and it just sounds like it keeps on rising, which is an auditory illusion created by slowly fading out the high notes and slowly fading in lower notes that keep on rising. But that was kind of what started this idea of we wanted the song to just keep like lifting, like a space shuttle launch in slow motion or something. So when Dylan showed me these strings, just out of nowhere, like comes over to my house, like, happy birthday, Riley, here you go.
young man.
You can't imagine my excitement. It was definitely a turning point when we got those strings in.
Yeah.
Was that before or after we had decided to do like the big climax at the end?
It was after. So in the version that I was recording to, there was like a placeholder demo, like a MIDI arrangement that you had done. We knew we wanted it to go into that theme. So that part was actually pretty clear cut.
Okay.
You had an arrangement, I think, or no, you had an organ in there, and then I arranged strings for that part too, and threw in some trumpets and stuff.
Right.
And then we added percussion to give it some chest hair.
Yeah, and it's real percussion too. Those aren't
It
samples.
Is real percussion, yeah.
We recorded those in the old Kirkwood band room. Well, before my internet cut out, I was talking about how since I was a guitarist, I couldn't really play anything in concert band growing up, so I was a percussionist, which is where they put like the lazy kids, basically.
Hear that?
Hear that?
I relate to that. Yeah.
So I was a percussionist, but I did get to learn how to play the timpani, which is the most fun to play in an orchestra because you are actually the thunder. Like, people talk about bringing the thunder in different situations, but when you're playing the timpani, you literally are bringing the thunder. So I got to put those skills to use in the song, playing the actual timpani, which we recorded on our own, on our lonesome.
And we had Joe Perea, our jazz band director, come in and play the crash cymbals for the and then did he also play the suspended cymbal doing that big wash? Yeah.
And Joe Perea is a very talented musician, so he was
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Also, and I don't, we've kind of been talking about this for a long time. I guess that's why we have an episode about it. But one quick note is that there's a trombone section in the climax of this song. You can especially hear it when it goes to, at the end of that motif we've been talking about, it lands on a big F chord. So it goes ba ba A minor ba ba
G.
I lost my tonal center, and then it lands on this F where everything's crashing, and you hear trombones go ba ba ba. Just do like a really quick little figure of their own. Those are real trombones, but they are cut and pasted from a different song that we recorded for the album and didn't end up using. And I think we pitch shifted them to be in the right key.
And and we time stretched and like crossed, we like just picked chords from the song, and glued them and stretched them to fit there. And that's why they're not perfectly in tune, but that's also why
I think that adds to it
so well. And I really like
the effect
that it has.
Do you have stems? I kind of want to listen to some stuff since we've been talking about it.
I do. They're not going to be balanced well at all, but
let's give it our best shot. Let's have that first thing we listen to be the trombones, because I bet they'll sound pretty terrible on their own.
Yeah.
Also, I was going to say a little known fact, but I don't think there are well known facts about this song because we're not a well known band. But just an interesting thing about the song you may not have noticed if you've listened to it before is that there's a pipe organ going through the whole second half of this song, like after the percussion comes in, which I think even more adds to just the euphoria. You don't often hear a pipe organ in a rock band context. And so that was Riley's idea. That works really well.
Yeah.
It wasn't a real pipe organ. We used a sample, but
yeah. Yeah. I'll play the organ going into the, and then have the brass join it, maybe.
Nice. Good thinking.
So,
wait, keep it going. They hit those E minor chords too, and I like how that sounds. Yeah. Oh yeah, because it's just the strings here, and then they come in.
You can really hear that bass bone on this right here.
Uh-huh.
Listen to this bass bony boy. You guys hear that?
Yeah. It's real brassy. It's
super splatty. I love it.
Yeah.
Here's it in the whole mix. You haven't really played any of this song yet, so
yeah.
Here's that part with those beautiful brass boys. Yeah,
let's listen to just the strings, and I think I just want to listen to them in the second half because you can hear them pretty well. There's not a lot extra to be discovered in the first portion. I completely forgot that there are tremolo strings going through that whole thing, because you don't really hear it in the mix. It's one of those things, as we say, it's felt, not heard. But yeah, tremolo, yeah, tremolo strings just chopping away. Oh yeah, Riley, I remember one thing that we talked about in this relationship.
Oh.
One thing we've talked about in our relationship, and more specifically this song and its arrangement, is we wanted, even though this was a payoff, we wanted the electricity to keep going. We didn't want it to feel like, oh, now we're flying. We wanted it to feel like we're about to see something. Now we do, kind of like that. Do you want me to do that again?
No.
Okay.
It was good the first time.
Thank you. Thanks. And so there are lots of parts where the timpani and concert bass drum keep rolling. Even though cymbals are crashing, those are like still just going throughout the whole song, because you want it to feel like it's just constant thunder. And so the strings doing constant tremolo like that was part of trying to achieve that effect. I totally forgot about it. Also, this is one of the songs that I was developing at that point as an arranger, I was really practicing and hearing the beauty in giving your part space. So all of that string stuff was in like the mids and highs, because I knew my trombones were going to be low. And the organ was also taking care of a lot of the low end. And we had like a sine bass in there too, taking care of like the really subby stuff. So all those strings exist pretty high. So in other words, you don't have every section of your orchestra playing the full spectrum of sound. You're finding out where their sweet spots are for the context and letting them live in those spaces to hopefully make it sound a lot cleaner.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to, maybe last thing here for stems, I want to listen to that arpeggiating synthesizer.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, so this is an interesting story of Dylan and Riley learning things about how to record electronic instruments that you could learn in 2 minutes in a YouTube video, or in 3 hours by trial and error, as we like to do. So we were like, I want to do this synth thing, but we want to affect how fast it's arpeggiating and what pattern it's arpeggiating in while it's playing. Now, folks, this is really simple stuff. You open up your automation lane and you draw automation for the module, for the arpeggiation rate and the arpeggiation pattern. That's how easy it is. We didn't know this. So we ended up mapping.
I still didn't know that.
We mapped the parameters of that we were trying to adjust to knobs on a keyboard. And Dylan played the notes while I like reached over him and was turning the knobs in real time, because we didn't know how to do that later. You're hearing is like a live broadcast, so to speak, of the synth performance, which, I mean, it's how it used to be done. It's really cumbersome, but it's how we did it. So imagine, if you will, Dylan and I, 3 years younger, maybe 4 years younger.
Yeah.
Hunched over a $80 keyboard with an also $80 music recording software, creating the noise you're about to hear. Here we go. And that's about it. It fades out from there.
I really like how that sounds.
If anybody wants to sample that and make like a cool song out of it, you can totally have it. Just let us know. We'll send it your way.
Nice.
But yeah, that's I think the image I get from that is a bird fluttering in a cage so fast that it eventually breaks out of the cage and then still is fluttering around. Like, he's free, but he's like, I don't know what to do.
That sound is, I'm just realizing, has always been very distinctly green to me. Yeah. That sounds like a green instrument, but in a really pleasant way. It also plays the role of a harp. But the tone of the synthesizer is kind of flute-like, kind of like a weird synthy flute, and like some of the lines that it plays has that sort of flutter, which is probably where you're getting the bird thing. Can we put that synth in with the strings and specifically listen to the when it's hitting the E minor going to F, and on the downbeats it does that big descending thing? So remember, that was a big satisfying moment for us.
Yeah, here it is.
Now let's actually let's play just that part of the whole of the completed song and like listen to the synth and how it just kind of cascades down from the percussion.
Yeah.
Because it just sounds like the percussion blows something up and like this is all the debris. I think it's really cool. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous.
Well, unless you have anything else, Rick, I mean, I think we explored some arrangement thoughts and history pretty in depth.
Yeah, I think it's all there. If anybody was wondering, like, what the heck was going on with this song, now they know.
Yeah.
Now they know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
The next question is, do you guys have any anecdotes? And I will start because I remembered as we were talking about this, talking, I was trying to combine those two words.
You did such a
good job. Yeah, thank you. As we were talking, I was remembering that we were trying to record a music video for this song. And we got, I mean, pretty far along in the at least idea spitting process of it. I think we got bogged down with maybe something else, or I think we were trying to mix, or maybe was this after we released?
No, this was before. We were, as we were mixing, we were hypothesizing about the music video. And I think later in the summer, I think we were like finishing mixing while we were, we even cast an actor for the music video. Mm-hmm. And we talked with a couple of like production, like directors we were going to have like help build the sets for the music video. And we had a, you know, Braden was going to do the filming and everything. So we got pretty far along with it, but
yeah
it was just to kind of tease the idea, and I don't know, like maybe we'll still do something with this song. It'll lose its promotional value, but it'll have artistic value still. Without getting into like too much detail, the idea was that it was going to be like no CG stuff, but just be pretty stunning what you're looking at. So it was all going to take place in a kid's bedroom from one angle, but the bedroom was going to be a stage set, and you could kind of tell that it was a stage set. And there were going to be lights interacting with the music, and then there, like, dramatic changes to lighting and set were going to happen, and that was going to be kind of the thrust of the video. So we had a pretty clear, a relatively clear idea of what we wanted it to be. But when it got to, all right, rubber meets the road, how are we going to execute these ideas and talking to people, as these things often pan out, including the recording of this album itself, you have ideas that you think, oh yeah, we'll just do that. And then it's like, well, you can't just do that. We're talking about like 5 to 50 steps involved in making this one thing happen. That's just a small part of this video or whatever. So we kind of lost steam / said, yeah, this is maybe not the time.
Yeah, there was a lot to do in order to release the album. At the same time, we were like getting the album artwork. We were designing the packaging. We were, sending the tracks to different mastering places to see who we wanted to master. So yeah, it just it didn't end up happening yet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is an interesting little tidbit about this song.
Yeah.
Good memory there, Lukey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have just a few things that I'll keep very brief each. We have a kind of a wide taste representation across our fan base, just because we do a lot of music and a lot of people can find something that they can latch on to. A lot of people have said that these instrumental songs, not a lot, several people have said that the instrumental songs are their favorite tracks on the album. I'm sure that there are also plenty of you out there who just kind of skip past them, like you maybe heard them once and it didn't really resonate, and which is totally fine, and your taste is your taste. I would encourage you to go back, if you are one of the folks who skips past the instrumental tracks, or those aren't the highlights you hit as you're kind of going back through the album, go back and give them a good listen, and listen to it on headphones, I would specifically recommend, because these instrumental songs are actually meant to be like focal points of the album. It's always paradigm shift stuff. There's no sense of, at least no sense of what we put into it artistically, of them being transition tracks or them being kind of little intermissions or something. These are like the point of the album. So they're definitely worth sinking your teeth into a little bit. Also, this is, if you were to ask me which track I would recommend listening to really loud on the album, if I were to say one song, it would be this one. Put it on a good set of speakers, turn off the lights when you're home alone or whatever, and listen to it to the point where the climax is really, really loud. And if it kind of freaks you out a little bit, that's exactly what it's meant to do. So I'd highly, highly, this song is best listened to absolutely blaring. So I would recommend that.
But also in the complete pitch black.
But also in the complete pitch black. I agree with that. Yeah, as far as anecdotes go, and Riley, maybe you were already thinking this one, so I'm sorry if I stole it. On December 21st of 2017, we had a listening party for this album. Mm. But this was just a few weeks before the album was released, and so we invited people to this listening party in the upper floor of Raygun in Nubo. And I don't know, were there like 50 people there or so, probably?
I think it was more than that.
More than that? Yeah, like, well, at any rate, it was a pretty full room, and like we had beer and food and stuff, and it was a great time. It was snowing, and so the vibe was spot on, and we had a whole poster of lyrics. None of this matters. I'm just trying to set the scene.
Oh yeah, it was more than snowing. It was like
it was a snowstorm. People had to tell us they weren't coming out.
And
the roads were too bad, but our turnout was still fantastic, which made me feel really good. So we told people kind of at the beginning, like, there's no pressure or there's no obligation necessarily, like, to sit down and be quiet. Like, you can be walking around. There was stuff to look at. I think we asked like if people wanted to have a conversation to just go into a area that's far away from the speakers so that they weren't distracting people or something. But it was not like some really formal thing, you know? And so we're listening to the album and people are kind of digging it, seemed like. And then I remember there was confusion about the people who were there had an access code. We handed out an access code to listen to the album early. There was confusion with that. And so Luke is bringing us back to the computer. And he's like, quietly, like, guys, we got to figure this out. So we were back at the computer.
Yeah, the link wasn't working.
Yeah. And so we're kind of stressed out. Riley, I don't remember if it was you or me, but at one point, so during this, Wake Up, She Cried comes on in the track listing. And I don't remember, Riley, if it was you or me who was like, wait, guys, just hold on a second, because we realized that the room was dead silent. No one was talking. No one was moving. You could hear a pin drop in that place. And so we just like stopped what we were doing and we listened, and everyone was silent for the whole track. You could feel the energy in the room. And when that payoff happened, and it was so loud and there was so much happening, it died off and everyone was still silent. I think I heard one guy go, wow. And then the next song faded in. And that was like, there's a feeling you get when you make music that, you know, we've been talking about how good this song is or whatever. We just mean that's for our taste, you know, like it accesses some sort of mystery and sort of drama that we have a penchant for. And so for us, it's a favorite track, but we know that who knows if anyone else is going to like it, basically, is how you feel when you're putting this stuff together. And so to feel a room of people like reacting the same way to it as we do, like in our hearts, was like one of the most weirdly dramatic experiences of my life. And I still think about that sometimes when I'm listening to this song.
Yeah, it was a really special moment. And I remember actually the song right before that, I was, so Hello Conscience comes right before this. And during like the climax of that song, I was like having a conversation with someone and it was getting really loud and like a lot of people were talking. Right after that, like as the song was ending, like there's a lot of conversation buzzing and we got called back there and I was all stressed about how like the download link wasn't working. So the room went from being like quite a bit of like little conversation around to so quiet yeah, the contrast was like, wait, whoa. And I think it was probably me who was like, wait, guys, hold on. Because it was just really validating in a way to know that caught people's attention.
Cool. Well, do you guys have any closing thoughts before we end this episode?
Not other than thanking you, Luke, for being such a good sport and such a great host.
Yeah, Lou, thanks for being such an awesome host tonight. Love you, man.
Love you guys, too.
Say I loved you.
Oh, love you, Rick.
What I'm just kidding. I love you, Lou. Oh.
Love you, too, Dill. What the listener might not know is at the end of this, they are paying me in Taco Bell. So I will gladly accept. Thank you, boys.
We didn't know that
this
either.
So to end the episode, thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. This has been episode 5 of the first ever Trees Reach podcast. We hope you have a great next 2 weeks until we do this again. And enjoy life.
And wash your hands.
Your hands.
Wash your hands. That's the tag.
Ready? Say it again. 3, 2, 1.
Wash your hands. There we go.
Nice.
Love it.
There's that good delay.
Beautiful.
All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
I'm tired of it. I'm. Can't you see it?